values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks so much for being here. Joining us now is the president of the R.T. Weatherman Foundation, Megan Mobbs. Megan, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
When I heard this story of what happened and what you're going to tell us in just a moment, I was compelled this Memorial Day weekend to talk about this because it's another level of what we should be recognizing and remembering on Memorial Day. This story involves what is near and dear to us in Arizona is a Tillman Scholar, a Pat Tillman Scholarship receiver. Is that true?
That is true. That is correct.
So can you tell us what happened, how you got involved, and why this story is so important?
Of course. So, you know, like you just said, we're going into Memorial Day weekend, which is obviously a somber time for many Americans, for those who have lost dear loved ones. It's a time of remembrance, and something extraordinarily important to me as the daughter of two service members. I'm a veteran myself. And so really honoring those who have given their lives in service of something greater than themselves has been a part of my personal story my whole life. So as president of the R.T. Weatherman Foundation, we've been doing work in Ukraine since March of last year. And in April of last year, it came to our attention at the end of the month that a former Marine, I guess you're never really a former Marine, I should call him a retired Marine, was likely killed in action down in Kherson, which is a southern portion of Ukraine. And he was down there actually helping establish a safe corridor for the evacuation of women and children as the Russians were advancing west, and was killed in action and fell there. And then, unfortunately, because the Russians occupied that area, his remains went unrecovered. And really, that's when my foundation became involved around August of last year, of trying to make sure that we were able to return him home to his loved ones and to rest on American soil. So with extraordinary honor, this last Friday, we were able to finally bring his remains home and deliver them to his family.
And he was he a captain or was he a lieutenant colonel in the Marine Corps?
So he was a retired lieutenant colonel, and so he had served many years. He was previously enlisted, actually. He served in Iraq during the height of the conflict in Iraq, served many tours over there, and then when he came back is actually when he became a Tillman Scholar. So I did not know him during his time as a Tillman Scholar. Actually, I never met him in person, but when I found out that he's a Tillman Scholar, I too am a Tillman Scholar. I felt extraordinarily called to make sure that he was returned home with the dignity and respect he deserved.
And his name is Grady Kirpasi, correct?
Kirpasi, so the ISM on his last name. That is
okay.
Correct.
Okay. And so the reason why this is, I think, important is there really wasn't much recognition or any recognition really from U.S. officials in this, because this isn't an official U.S. conflict. So he wasn't recognized for his service and his loss. Is that correct?
That is correct. I mean, there was zero recognition, and I think it made it all the more profound because there was a Ukrainian official that was there on the tarmac awaiting his return. And I understand that we're not formally involved, but I would argue that with billions of dollars of aid going in terms of lethal aid, but also budgetary support, the kind of least thing that we could do, both from a kind of controversy perspective, but also from just a dollars to cents perspective, is ensure that those who fall in action in Ukraine are repatriated home with the honor and respect and dignity that they deserve.
And he is a Purple Heart recipient as well from other conflicts. So he was a decorated Marine. And again, Tillman scholarships are not just handed out. There are levels of requirements that the family looks at and that the board looks at for those requirements. So he was of the highest esteem.
Absolutely. I mean, you just said it. He decorated himself in valor and honor and service to our country in Iraq, where he felt called to serve. And then post-transition out of active service, he still demonstrated selfless service, was deeply committed to helping other service members successfully transition into the civilian sector, which is why he received the Tillman Scholarship, was to go back to school so he could continue to give back to America. And so it's all of those characteristics, his honor, his deep love of country, and an important point is that he was brought here as an orphan. He's from Korea, brought here as an orphan. He was adopted by an American family. He was very sick when he first came here, adopted by an American family, grew up loving America, deeply believing in what makes America so special, so much so that he volunteered multiple times to serve his country. And so it is one of those stories that has to be told, his personal story, but it is also why I think that our government has a responsibility to honor honor those who've given their lives.
And so your organization went at its own expense and its own risk. You went to Ukraine to identify, recover, and return his remains to make sure that the recognition happened, at least from Americans, if not the American government.
Absolutely. So my team is comprised of mostly veterans ourselves, and so we very much feel that it is our responsibility, and we will kind of bear any burden in order to make sure that we return other veterans home to their families. And yes, we did this. We are a private operating foundation, mostly funded by the generosity of our two founders, and it was all private dollars that led to all of this.
So when the way you are telling the story, I am surprised that I've not heard it and others like me have not heard it. What do you want people to remember? The Memorial Day for my family, I'm a Gold Star family member. Tomorrow will be the 20th anniversary of my brother giving his life in Iraq. So for my family, Memorial Day significance, it's not about the day for us. It's for other people. But for the people that will be recognizing Memorial Day over the weekend and remembering, what do they need to be remembering about men like this or women like this that are not exactly line of duty, but at the same time, it is line of duty. It's just not official, and the government's not recognizing it.
Well, I think that, and first off, I'm aware of your family's loss, and I think for those that have lost a loved one, right, every day is Memorial Day. I think what's incumbent upon Americans in America is that we begin to tell these stories. Whether it's Grady's story, whether it's your brother's stories, we have to tell them. And it's these stories of service and sacrifice that's going to breed patriotism and unity, and I think it's kind of a buy-in back into what makes America exceptional. And so what I ask of Americans is, over the weekend, find a story. Find a story of someone who gave their life for this country. Learn that story and share that story with someone else.
Yeah, it's the same message we've been sending for 20 years. If people listening here in Arizona want to learn more about Grady or learn more about your organization, do you have a website where people could go this weekend and learn more about what your group does, but more about this story?
We do. So it's weathermansfoundation.org.
Okay, Weathermans Foundation, with an S, weathermansfoundation.org.
Singular. So Weatherman, almost okay. Like the Weatherman on TV,
yep.
weathermansfoundation.org. It was actually named after our founder. Her father was injured in the Pacific in World War II and came back and became a local journalist. So deeply believed in the kind of the power of serving in uniform, but also the power of journalism at the local community level.
Well, I would like to say thank you for the hard work that you do and for sharing this story that I knew very little about just until yesterday. But thanks for sharing it with my audience.
Well, thank you for having me on and giving me the privilege to share it. I really appreciate it.
All right. That is Megan Mobb. She herself is a Tillman Scholar. She herself is a veteran. She's a PhD and runs this organization. And what a great story. Just one more person. If you want to go to weathermanfoundation.org and learn more about this story that not many people have heard, it would be a great time to do that. Coming up in a moment, we're going to go back to ESA funding and our government. The governor is saying that the previous administration illegally funded the ESA program, which is empowerment scholarship accounts or the educational savings accounts, whatever you think ESA stands for. We're going to talk about that battle coming up here in just a couple of moments.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
All right, so now we're scheduled to talk about Governor Hobbs and the ESA program, but now I feel like I got to talk about DeAndre Hopkins. What's going on? So DeAndre Hopkins is no longer an Arizona Cardinal. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? A super talented young man. But if he didn't want to be here, if he doesn't want to be here, is it good that he's gone? If you're going to start over, I want you to think about relationships you've been in. If you know it's over, the longer you hang on, the worse it seems to get. Or it just, you can't move on because you're still stuck in part of the past. So it's affecting your present by not letting completely go of the past. As talented as DeAndre Hopkins is, as great of a wide receiver as he is it a good thing for the Arizona Cardinals if they are truly starting over and turning a new page? New leadership, new GM, new head coach. Are they turning over a new leaf? Are they going to go in a direction that's different? Is this in the long run? The short term, let's face it, man, Cardinal fans, I'm one of them. We are in for a long road, I think. It is going to be a rough 17 games for us this year, especially being in a division where you've seen some superstars play the superstar game. But just from a perspective of starting over, 2 years from now, 2 seasons from now, are the Cardinals going to be a different team and these couple of months be a distant memory? And that's for the genius. And what I mean by that is that's for the people, in my mind, that's for the people that earn their money in leadership of an organization, in any organization. When you say, listen, this is not going to be good. We are ripping the Band-Aid off, and we are going to basically start from scratch. And one of the things that's happening is we're going to lose very talented people. The media is not going to be very kind to us. People are going to ask us, what the heck are we doing? What kind of a team are we going to field? We're going to take our lumps this next season on the field and off the field. But we've got to believe in, can they convey to the people that are there, to the players that they want to get here? That's the other part of this with free agency, is having an organization where you're not last on everybody's list. Nobody else wants me. I'll end up in Arizona. If you remember, there was a time when that was the Arizona Cardinals. That the Arizona Cardinals were where people went to end their careers. Wasn't it Boomer Esiason here? We know that Emmitt Smith came here. And then they all go back to their old team. They sign a one-day contract and they retire with that team. And we don't want to be everybody. Every year we get the first-round draft pick and then they don't get signed. All those days have happened before. But there was a changing of the guard. And there was a time when Michael Bidwill, when he took over the team, that said, we're going to build a winner. And did. They've shown, and Michael Bidwill has shown, that he has the ability to have leadership in place that can build a winner, that can get a team to the Super Bowl, because the Cardinals did it. When it hasn't happened, and as long as it hasn't happened for the Cardinals, people begin to say, you can't do it. Well, when you're just trying to fix and repair things, are you just prolonging the inevitable? It looks like now what they're saying is, it's time to trade it in. Get a different model, and they've got a different model. That's going to mean giving up some people like a DeAndre Hopkins. The guy is obviously as talented as they come when it comes to the wide receiver position. But is this going to be a distant memory, because it's not a piece of the puzzle of this organization moving forward? That remains to be seen. I'm hoping that's what's happening. This is obviously a cleaning house. We are going to bring in our people. It may take us a couple of years, but when you see us in a couple of years, Cardinal fans, what you've endured this next year is going to be a distant memory. And I hope, I'm a Cardinals fan, I hope that's what they're going to do. But if you're just jumping in the car, or you're just tuning in, DeAndre Hopkins was not traded. DeAndre Hopkins was released by the Arizona Cardinals. So he is no longer going to play for the Arizona Cardinals. It's a done deal. The Cardinals now know, because he didn't show up for the first week of OTAs. He didn't show up. So now it's no longer a mystery whether or not they're going to have DeAndre Hopkins. The Cardinals now know they will be without him. So now start planning accordingly, start playing accordingly, and move on. Keep moving forward. It's an interesting concept. There's no doubt about that. It's an interesting concept. But we'll see. We shall see. Coming up in a moment, the governor is at odds with the state treasurer. State treasurer said she had no idea about this. But Governor Hobbs says that the way the ESA program, or the scholarships, the voucher program for public schools was funded, the way that was funded was illegal. So we're going to talk about that word illegal and whether or not that's true next.
Values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
One of the coolest people I've ever met, Darius Rucker. One of the nicest. I got to spend about 20 minutes with him on his bus, and was one of the... When you meet someone you really like to meet, and they turn out to be nicer than you'd hoped, he's that guy. It was so cool. Anyway, happy Friday, everyone. As you're heading out, keep it locked here. Traffic updates. There's already one rollover that may affect your commute if you're headed out of town, so keep it locked here. We'll get you there safe and sound. I want to read something first and then get into a different part of the topic, because I think they dovetail. This is Allie Bones, who is the friend for decades and chief of staff, was the chief of staff for Governor Katie Hobbs, has resigned. And I went to read part of the statement and then some of the news story about the fallout. In the statement by the governor said, Allie Bones exemplifies the true meaning of a public servant, and I'm incredibly grateful for her leadership throughout the transition in this first legislative session of my administration. Her goal was to build a team that could work across the aisle to navigate divided government, and she accomplished that. So I read that because I don't necessarily agree with it. But that's the statement. But it goes on. There were a lot of questions about this budget. There have been a lot of questions, I'm talking about from Democrats, about the way the governor has handled the battle with the Senate to get nominees to lead parts of the government, departments of the government passed through the Senate. And here's just a little further in the story. And in a span of 3 weeks in April and May, Hobbs, whose first month in office were characterized by verbal sparring with Republican legislative leaders, go back to the working across the aisle part of that statement, and twice found herself at odds with Democratic lawmakers. Democrats critiqued the governor over budget deal that did nothing to rein in the state's private school voucher program. Mm-hmm. And another volley of friendly fire came when she vetoed a bill that would allow more homemade foods. So let's talk quickly about the what was called the tamale bill. The other part is that Democrats were on board. And this is where politics is alive and well for everybody out there that wants to get rid of politics and work together. Let me explain. This was a bipartisan piece of legislation that sounds very silly, but it goes so deep into ideology. And that is that if you were someone, and we know that we've seen people on the side of the road selling tamales or selling homemade food to make extra money for families. It is a way for someone to be an entrepreneur, carry their own weight, and to contribute to their family. And I love to see it. And this bill would have made hot food more easy to sell legally, you know, door to door or from your home. And it was a bipartisan effort. There were a lot of Democrats that signed on to this bill as well. Lots of Democrats. And so they all signed on to it. It passed through the legislature with a bipartisan support, gets to the governor's desk. The governor said there's not enough safety measures in here. So, no, she vetoed it. And Democrats were furious. Not just Republicans. Democrats were furious. So then when it came time to go back to the legislature and say, okay, we have enough votes with the yeses from the bill that passed, let's override the veto with those votes. House of Representatives voted. A bunch of the Democrats says, nah, we'll go along with the political narrative and we will cover the governor and we'll vote no to override. So the veto held. People were still angry, but the veto held. Let's go back to the other part of this, because now the governor says that $50 million of the ESA program, which is the voucher program alluded to in the story, $50 million now all of a sudden was illegal. The state treasurer, Kimberly Yee, said she found out about it in the press release. So, again, Allie Bones steps down. The chief of staff steps down. Why'd she step down? The narrative here, in a span of 3 weeks, Democrats were upset with her and her chief of staff because you didn't stand your ground when it came to getting part of your cabinet through the legislative process. You vetoed a bill on tamales and you didn't do enough to stop this private school voucher program, which, by the way, I love that program. But the Democrats hate it. You didn't do anything. So what happens? Political pressure. This is where my opinion is political pressure. Chief of staff steps down. Someone else now that is going to be much more politically minded, much more partisan will come into that role because that's what the hard line on the left wants. So for everybody out there that talks about the right wing, and I hear it all the time, that phrase is used, the right wing of the Senate, Freedom Caucus, the far right wing in the House of Representatives, all this far right wing. What are you going to get now? If Allie Bones is being recognized for reaching across the aisle and she was forced to step down, what will she be replaced with? Someone just like her? Or is someone going to step in that's going to be the hardliner? And are we going to see the gridlock everybody was worried about? It's a fair question from the voters in Arizona. But isn't it fascinating that one of the things they alluded to was that you didn't do anything about the ESA program. You didn't do anything about the vouchers. All of a sudden, $50 million that Governor Ducey put in play for this was done illegally. And this shows that Republicans don't care about funding public education. Never mind that it's the Republicans that have bumped up against the aggregate spending. Aggregate expenditure limitation, the AEL law that was passed in 1980, that they've increased spending with a Republican governor and a Republican-led legislature for a very long time, that in the last 2 years, they have added so much money to public education, they are triggering a law from 1980 that says there's a limit on how much you can spend. And instead of recognizing, yes, they are obviously adding lots of money to the budget for education, it's no, you're not adding enough. And the fact that you want people to have choice. The funny thing about that statement from the governor on this issue is really interesting to me. I want you to hear what the governor said, and then I'm going to tell you why this is such an interesting part of her statement. Illegally giving $50 million to private schools while failing to properly invest in public education is just one egregious example of the previous administration's blatant disregard for public schools. Everybody needs to know that Governor Hobbs attended Seton Catholic High School. And when asked about it, she said, my parents worked really hard to pay for me to go there. In other words, my family can afford it. We're not helping yours afford it. I'm going to defend the ESA program. If you are a working class family with a child that is gifted academically, and you know you can tell that they are, and they have an opportunity to go to a school that can change the direction of their life, like a Seton Catholic or a Brophy, a Scottsdale Christian. I'm specifically talking about religious schools, private schools, religious schools. But it's a prep school for college and can change the trajectory of your child's life, but you could never afford it. But if you had about $7,000 a year of your tax dollars that were allocated for your child, and you could use that ESA program to offset that tuition, and your child has an opportunity to be surrounded by people like Governor Hobbs' family thought she would benefit from, and she sure did. She became the governor of the state of Arizona because of it. Why is that a bad thing? This is why I hate the politics of education. It is about dollars. It's not about kids. They don't want the dollars leaving a failed school system. That a parent shouldn't have the right to say, that money and my child are better served over here than over there, so we're going to take both and do that. I would think working class families, lower income families, you would be the ones that are most in favor of this and most upset that they would do this. You got to go to Seton Catholic, Governor. How about the rest of the kids? I think it's a great question. All right, coming up in just one moment, Senator Sinema says the Border Patrol, CBP, and Border Patrol agents are overwhelmed. We'll get to it coming up in just a moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
You can't hear this song. What does it make you think of? Oh, you probably haven't seen the movie, have you? Have you seen Maverick? Right? This is the beach scene in Maverick, right? Great movie. Great movie. I was going to shift gears, but then I got an email, and I want you to hear this. So what we were talking about just a moment ago, Governor Hobbs criticizing the previous administration and its lack of funding for public schools, even though there was so much funding added. Now, notice I didn't say that Arizona should be done spending money, but acting like they are ignoring schools is such a partisan bunch of political nonsense. The Republican-led legislature and a former Republican governor added so much money to education that it broke a law. They had to get a two-thirds majority of the legislature to override a limit on how much money they could spend for education. So to say that they ignored public education is a farce. They did not ignore public education. But it's also about all-day kindergarten and how this is going to have an opportunity to limit all-day K. And I'm going to get to a statement from the superintendent in just a moment. But the state treasurer responded to all of this as well. The state treasurer made her statement, and I want to make sure I read it accurately. And she said that as it's become the norm for this governor, my office first learned of her action through a press release prior to receiving the letter. We have yet to receive any communication from the governor or her team on this matter more than this letter. Our legal team is currently reviewing the lawlessness of the governor's move to determine the next step. Now I want to read to you Superintendent Tom Horn. This is his second stint as superintendent. And oddly enough, he served as the superintendent when the governor was a Democrat back then in Janet Napolitano. So here's what he writes. The grant would have allowed parents of kindergartners to receive half-day funding through an existing ESA program or to apply for a separate scholarship that would pay for the second half of their kindergarten day. It was funded through ARPA, which is that money from COVID money, and a separate scholarship not connected to the existing state-funded ESA program. Here's the important part. All-day kindergarten was a project of Democrat Governor Janet Napolitano during her first term as superintendent of, during my first term as superintendent of public instruction. I agreed with the governor, and this became a bipartisan project at the legislature. With all-day kindergarten, students learned to read in kindergarten, and that gave them a head start in first grade. To eliminate funding for all-day kindergarten will reduce the academic performance of Arizona students, which is the precise opposite of what the government should be doing. So I will go back to my original statement. The chief of staff for the governor quit. She resigned. Political pressure. So she has been a friend of the governor's for decades. The governor had thanked her for reaching across the aisle and said she did a great job. But one of the reasons why is cited in the news story from the Arizona Republic is that in a span of 3 weeks, she made Democrats angry. Her own party, she made them angry. One had to do with not standing up to the Senate and getting people confirmed to run government offices. The other was not signing the tamale bill. But then there was another leg of this stool, and that had to do with not doing enough to limit funding for the ESA program, this exact program that the superintendent is talking about. So $50 million pulled out of this. The state school chief said families from the Empowerment Scholarship Program are not affected by this week's decision. But when it affects kindergarten, so now you've got all day K, the Governor Napolitano worked with a Republican legislature to get done all those years ago, while Tom Horn was superintendent of public instruction back then. Now he's dealing with the next Democrat governor, the second one we've had after Janet Napolitano, or the first one we've had after Janet Napolitano, and she takes money away from all-day kindergarten and blames Republicans. If that doesn't have your head spinning, I don't know what does. Somehow, that $50 million should be coming from another source, but you're not going to get it from another source. You're saying it was illegal the way the governor did it, and now this is all happening. This is mind-boggling that it's going on. You've got a Democrat that is taking money away from a program because it empowers parents. They were called the Empowerment Scholarship Accounts. It empowers parents to take tax dollars and spend on their child's education any way they see fit. A Democrat is taking that away from poor families, and a Republican in the superintendent is saying it's the wrong thing to do in education, to take money away. In one story, the governor chastises the previous administration, Republicans, in not funding education, and then releases a statement saying, I'm reducing $50 million from an education program. You can't make it up. You cannot make it up. We are living in the Twilight Zone. I cannot wait to see what kind of a pretzel they're twisted into trying to explain this one and make sense of it. And I cannot wait to see now who the next chief of staff will be. It's going to be a fun weekend. Coming up in just a moment, we're going to go back to the story, sad story yesterday, a DPS trooper shot in the line of duty. We're going to talk about the implications next.